Angela, Ms. Ligola versus Ashcroft, Mr. Burton.
May it please the court. My name is Justin Burton. I'm here on behalf of Peter Gugoyev, Iordanka Kasyova, and Iana Petkova, husband, wife, and stepdaughter and daughter. We're here on a petition for review of the Board of Immigration Appeals decision streamlining the immigration judge's decision of their asylum application and denying it. Mr. Gugoyev and his wife are from Bulgaria. They have for generations been persecuted by the communist regime. We recognize since 1989 that the communist regime is no longer in power. However, certain remnants do remain. The facts in this case are as follows. In 1981...
Well, I think we're all pretty familiar with the facts. One of the standards, one of the things you complain about is the denial of your request to have the expert testimony taken by affidavit, you know, your witness who was unavailable. And there was some discussion in terms of the standard that the court should have used for admissibility, whether it was a Daubert standard or should be something less. What's the standard you're urging on the court and why? You've expressed it in your brief. I'd just like you to elaborate on it.
Sure, Your Honor. The standard to present evidence before the court is relatively low in an immigration matter. The immigration judge entered into evidence to Christian and Vitae without objection by the trial attorney for the government at that time. The expert witness was available, physically present in court, to testify if the government had any objection to her qualifications. Because of that, we feel that the declaration should have been admitted into evidence. Because later it's excluded because they didn't have an opportunity to cross-examine her with regards to her qualifications to Bulgaria and Eastern Europe. Although we believe that it was present in the curriculum vitae that she was an expert in such fields, even though her expertise remained with the Soviet Union, it also remained with the Eastern Bloc countries. We do think, and it's kind of unclear by the record, whether this declaration was actually entered or not. In the judge's opinion on page 2, it seems to indicate that he did in fact enter it into the record, even though in testimony he said he was going to exclude the declaration, and in fact he excluded the curriculum vitae after he had already admitted it into the evidence as well, and that's from the May 8th, 2000 hearing. On page 2, you'll find it when he discusses these following were entered into the record, and he discussed every exhibit that was then there entered. He then later ruled in his decision that he didn't take into consideration the expert testimony or the declaration. The expert was available at the two previous individual hearings. Actually, it was set for four individual hearings with four-hour blocks of time for each one. The expert witness was available for the first two. The attorney for the respondent, the petitioner, motioned the court to have this testimony heard telephonically. She was on sabbatical at Dartmouth College. The motion was granted, however, she then had left and done a sabbatical in China.
Did he give a reason for excluding Johnson's statement?
He didn't necessarily go into a reason. There may have been off-the-record conversations.
No,
but
he
gave a rhetorical...
Did he give a reason?
No, he did not, Your Honor. He indicated in his testimony, at least, that in a rhetorical question, how can I possibly hear testimony from somebody who's in sabbatical in Czechoslovakia telephonically? She was available off representations by the petitioner's counsel at the time that she was available telephonically and that they were ready and available to present her as such. It was not taken, and the record was closed upon a written decision by the court. The written decision came 7 months after the merits hearing, the final merits hearing in May of 2000. We don't know why within the 7-month period, if it was such a hardship upon the court to hear the testimony telephonically, why they just couldn't set it over for a one-hour block of time to hear the expert's testimony, as it would have certainly influenced the case here. I think we know from Bulgaria that...
And did you make such a request?
The petitioner's counsel did try and argue at the... You'll see on the last page of the transcript from that day, he did try and argue for, or he pled with the immigration judge to allow the declaration to be entered. It didn't go into the record, at least, or oral testimony, his plea to have him either hear telephonically or set it over for a short continuance.
You're saying that didn't make it in the record?
That didn't.
Did not.
Right. It did not make it into the record.
The government says that the reason for his excluding it was that the affidavit addressed matters beyond the scope of Johnson's expertise.
Well, the judge never particularly explained that. He never explained that either in his opinion, where he said he entered it into the evidence, and he never explained it in the transcripts or the oral testimony taken before the court. All he indicated was, it seems that she's an expert in Russian history. He's excluding it based on the government's objection because she's not there to be able to be cross-examined on the CV, which had already been entered in the record and later excluded. There was also one other affidavit.
So we can get that clear. He indicates that it appears that, you know, her testimony might not be relevant. The government then says the testimony should be excluded because she's not available to cross. But the court never makes any comment about excluding that affidavit after that.
No, Your Honor.
That's the state of the record.
Right.
That's
it says she's not available for cross, and we're not including it into the record.
Did he consider the country conditions report?
He did consider, I'm not sure if he considered the country conditions report, but he considered a State Department report and an advisory opinion. However, the State Department...
He didn't need live testimony for that, did he?
He did not. It was all written testimony. It was all
written testimony from one side, not the other, right?
Right, and we didn't have an opportunity to cross-examine the writer or the maker of that instrument as well. What the country conditions said and what the State Department advisory opinion said seemed to also contradict one another. The country report seemed to indicate, yes, there had been changes in the government over the previous 8 years or 9 years. However, country conditions don't remain good by any means or any stretch of the imagination. There's still corruption that exists. There's still state agencies that can't be controlled by the government. The ministries...
Mr. Burton, if I may switch for one moment. I don't want to waste too much of your time here. This question of standing guard, forcing to stand guard and being exposed to radiation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Does not seem terribly plausible. This was in Bulgaria he was asked to stand guard?
It was in Bulgaria and...
And tribunals fair distance.
It's in Ukraine. However, all of Eastern Europe at that time was under severe watch because of the shifts in the winds and bringing radioactive materials into Eastern Europe. The fact does remain that his superiors were in full gear, in full protective gear, and they had Peter actually go out and stand guard with absolutely no protective gear over a 24-hour period.
Any indication that other soldiers were asked to do the same duty in full gear?
There was, and there was one other soldier that did without full gear. There's one other soldier that did without gear whatsoever, just like Peter. However, there's no indication in the record or otherwise that other soldiers are out there in protective gear.
There's no indication.
None, Your Honor.
That's kind of make weight, then, though, isn't it? I mean, it sounds like maybe there's no indication this was done because of people's political background or their ethnic background. We've had cases from some of those countries over there putting one particular ethnic group up on the front lines and all, but you don't have any evidence to show anything like that, do you?
No, but it was over a period of time that this took place, and even his military advisors scrutinized and also pulled Peter away from the rest of the soldiers and scrutinized his conduct before the military. They also had him do things that...
Did they ever connect that with the duty? In other words, say, because your background, you go stand out there?
They never specifically said that orally to him. However, he's of the firm belief because the one other person that was with him was also of a democratic background, was also... against the communist government, the communist way of doing things, that had similar generations of opinions against the present government in place. And with regard to the persecution, I'm not sure if it's just one incident that would put him over the edge, would make it seem more than harassment. What it is, it's a period of persecution over time. It's persecution over time which led to his belief is based on his political background and also the persecution by the government and also the government, the Ministry of Interior, which the expert witness later goes into.
You're into your rebuttal time. I just wanted you.
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor.
I mean, you can go on, but you're in your rebuttal time. That's what the light means.
I'll rest now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burton. Mr. Buchholz?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jeffrey Buchholz from the Department of Justice for Respondent Attorney General John Ashcroft. Because Your Honors seemed interested in the exclusion of the expert testimony, I'll address that first and see if I can clear up the record a little bit on it. On page 284 of the record, the INS attorney objected on the ground that Ms. Johnson was not qualified as an expert in the matters for which she was being proffered, that she was potentially an expert in Russian banking, as her resume demonstrates, but that she was not qualified as an expert in these matters. The immigration judge sustained that objection on the record at page 284. It is also, I think, clear from the record that the immigration judge excluded her testimony because he didn't believe that she was available from her location in Prague. It is true, as my opposing counsel has pointed out, that she was available either in person or in the United States telephonically at earlier hearings. However, at each of those earlier hearings, either the petitioners requested a continuance for various reasons or at least acquiesced in a continuance. There was no objection ever to any of those continuances by petitioner's counsel. So the fact that she may have been available at earlier hearings is neither here nor there. At the ultimate
what do you say about this fundamental disparity we have with the way the government's position on country conditions is treated and the petitioners is. The State Department documentation gets into evidence, and we have no idea about who the faceless functionary is who puts all this stuff together. And it really is very potent evidence. I mean, you folks come in here and rely on it all the time. We have no idea of the accuracy of that stuff, who writes it or anything. Here, at least we know the credentials of the person. We know a lot more about this person than we know about the person who wrote the State Department stuff.
Well, you're correct, Your Honor, that this court has ruled in many, many cases that the immigration judge and the board, and then this court, for that matter, can take administrative notice or judicial notice of the State Department.
Well, of course, we've also said that we ought to be somewhat skeptical about it, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's true that this court has I think the best way of describing this court's case law is that it is routine and perfectly normal for the court and the board and the immigration judge to take administrative notice of those reports, despite the fact that Your Honor points out that the author is not available for cross-examination.
Judge Posner, I believe, has an opinion saying we ought to be careful about how we use it.
This court has several opinions.
Of course, particularly with respect to Bulgaria, because Bulgaria is one of the Eastern European countries that we have been particularly trying to cultivate to offset the hostility of some of the more established countries like France and Germany. I think Bulgaria has sent troops or police to Iraq. So there's clearly a conflict of interest so far as the State Department is concerned.
It's true, Judge Posner, this court has pointed out that the State Department materials are not wholly read, and I certainly agree with that. But on the other hand, this court in numerous cases has relied on them, and the standard of review here is substantial evidence. And so even though it's true that the State Department materials may not be fully read and may not be conclusive by themselves as a matter of law, they certainly are substantial evidence. And in cases including Kopchev, a Bulgarian asylum case, 295 F3rd 714, Karapetian, also cited in our briefs, 162 F3rd 933, a former Soviet Republic of Georgia asylum case, the petitioners in those cases presented some evidence undermining or contrary to the State Department materials. This court recognized that matters may not be quite as simple as the State Department materials suggested, but nonetheless relied on the State Department materials as substantial evidence supporting the agency's findings.
But don't we basically still have here an uneven playing field with the way that kind of material is treated and the way the IJ here treated the material proffered by the petitioner?
Well, I think that The way I would answer your question first, Judge Ripple, is that we don't have an uneven playing field because the INS attorney's objection that the immigration judge sustained was well taken, that Ms. Johnson is not an expert.
But ordinarily, what you would do in a case like this, true, her publications are in Russia, but you know, she's described as in her CV as an expert on Eastern Europe in general, even if she hasn't published on Bulgaria. So you'd think the usual sequel to the government's objection would be some kind of Daubert hearing, find out what she knows about Bulgaria. Her statement looks very well informed. You know, it looks as if she knows a lot about Bulgaria.
And one can't... Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
No.
And you just can't reject because the curriculum vitae speaks of banking. That's what I was going to get to as well in the affidavit. She talks about, you know, finances and how it affects politics and the issue of control in Bulgaria. And there are several paragraphs here that would be relevant that she would have some expertise in.
Your Honor, perhaps it's true that perhaps if Professor Johnson had been present or available by telephone for the hearing, she could have been examined in a Daubert sort of hearing.
Was she not available in telephone, by telephone? I don't understand. There are telephones in Czechoslovakia. So I don't know. What was the big problem?
Well, the problem was that the immigration judge, who is the person responsible for running the courtroom and knows certainly more than I or anyone else about what telephone hookups are possible or reasonable, thought that it wasn't possible.
Please, there's no telephone hookup to Czechoslovakia. That's ridiculous.
No, I'm certainly not suggesting, Judge Posner, there's no telephone hookup to Czechoslovakia. However, when the immigration judge at the beginning of that hearing at pages 141 and 142 said, I thought that she was in Dartmouth. You're telling me now she's in Prague.
What difference does it make? I mean, it's a phone call to Dartmouth. It's a phone call to Hanover or a phone call to Prague.
Petitioner's counsel
at the... That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Petitioner's counsel at the hearing never said, she is available by telephone in Prague. Here's her phone number. She's willing to place the call if Your Honor isn't willing to. There was never any response from petitioner's counsel to the judge is concerned that she was in Prague.
And the immigration judge seems to have thought that while he would call someone in Hanover, he wouldn't call someone in Prague. What was the basis of that?
I'm not sure what the basis of that is, Your Honor.
It sounds pretty irrational.
Well,
I mean, you can call anywhere in the world.
Plus, he has a government phone, doesn't he? Immigration judge, he has a government line.
I don't know for a fact.
I would think, and you certainly would have one, or certainly someone in your department could have set up an international call.
Well, it wasn't our department that was conducting this hearing, but in any event, Your Honors are probably correct that as a technical matter, it would have been possible for the judge to make a telephone call to Prague, but I guess what I'd like to point out in that regard is that petitioner's counsel said a few minutes ago that made a suggestion that there may have been a request for a continuance so that the judge could take testimony from Ms. Johnson when she was more easily available. That is not in the record. There is no suggestion whatsoever in the record that petitioner's counsel ever said anything to the effect of, Your Honor, Ms. Johnson's testimony is critical to my case. If for some reason you think that you can't hear her testimony with her in Prague, please grant a continuance for her to come back to the United States. That's not in the record at all. And for that matter, at the beginning of the hearing, before there was any testimony that day, when the immigration judge made clear his belief that because she was in Prague, she couldn't testify, petitioner's counsel never said, well, in that case, we'd like a continuance. Her testimony is going to be critical to our case.
Well,
we haven't started the hearing yet.
Completely ridiculous, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be ridiculous.
Well, I think, Your Honor, it wouldn't be ridiculous at all if Professor Johnson's testimony is as important.
If the immigration judge's position is that this matter can be resolved by telephone, then obviously he's not going to grant a continuance.
Well, I think that
what sense would that make?
What I'm trying to suggest is that it would have made sense if petitioner's counsel had...
It wouldn't have made any sense, right? He's prepared to call Hanover, but if he has to call Prague, he'd rather wait 6 months till she gets back.
All I'm trying to suggest, Your Honor,
is a rational way to run a hearing.
All I'm trying to suggest, Your Honor, is that if if Ms. Johnson's testimony was as important to petitioner's case as petitioner is suggesting.
The statement was important, and the only issue was her qualifications. And that could have been resolved by a phone call.
I think I'd like to return just for a second to the standard of review and emphasize that in Topchow and in...
Yeah, but whatever the standard of review is, it doesn't permit us to condone complete irrationality. And this telephone business suggests, you know, that this judge was behaving in an irrational fashion. I mean, he's supposed to be an immigration judge. I mean, he's supposed to deal with the world, but he's apparently afraid to call a foreign country.
Judge Posner, I'd like to remind Your Honor that the record reflects the ground for the immigration judge's refusal to consider.
But that ground is improper because he didn't, because there was, because the mere fact that her curriculum vitae didn't list articles about Bulgaria didn't mean that she didn't have expertise concerning Bulgaria. Because as an expert in Eastern Europe and the succession to the communist countries, she might be perfectly competent to read the, you know, the articles that she relied on in various magazines and make a statement which would be an informed statement.
I see my light is on. I'd like to make one very brief point, if
teaches,
I may.
You know, she teaches Bulgarian politics. I mean, she only spends a week, you know, in the quarter, whatever it is, but, you know, a lot of countries there, Bulgaria isn't the most important.
If I may one not very important point.
Face that she, I mean, she is teaching the subject, so she obviously knows something about Bulgaria.
What I'd like to just close with very briefly, Your Honors, I know my light is on. The issue of Professor Johnson only comes up if the immigration judge erred in finding no past persecution. I shouldn't say it only comes up if the immigration judge erred in finding no past persecution, but the immigration judge found no past persecution. If that's the case, the burden never shifted to the service to prove changed conditions. Ms. Johnson's testimony is most relevant to the issue of changed conditions. Everything in her affidavit about what actually happened to petitioners in Bulgaria is hearsay. Petitioner's own testimony is in the record and covers those issues. So I would submit that substantial evidence in the record does support the immigration judge's finding that what happened to petitioners in Bulgaria does not rise to the level of persecution and or is not on account of political opinion, and that if that's the case, this court does not have to reach the issue of changed conditions. If this court does reach the issue of changed conditions, I submit that substantial evidence supports the immigration judge's finding of changed conditions, as well as numerous decisions of this court, including Topchev, Karapetian, Vaduva, Bachkova, numerous other cases
now,
that recognize
the immigration judge's
condition.
Opinion did not discuss all the evidence of past persecution, did it?
It didn't discuss all of the evidence, but it
right.
discussed a lot of it. And
well,
it,
I know, but it's not very satisfactory to say, well, there are items 1 through 10 of evidence. I'm going to discuss 1 through 5.
I'd be happy if Your Honor are willing to extend my time to discuss the evidence of past persecution.
No. The question is, why didn't he discuss the other evidence?
I think that in this case, as in many, that one could wish the immigration judge had written a more thorough opinion, but the immigration judge did write an opinion that considered...
Well, shouldn't his opinion cover all the evidence?
I think his opinion covered the essence of the evidence presented by the petitioners. The emphasis of the petitioner at the hearing was on his anti-communism and the various setbacks that he suffered in his career, and the immigration judge correctly addresses that, holding that it doesn't rise to the level of persecution.
Yeah, but he forgets, he doesn't mention the beatings he suffered in 81 when he was beaten at school, in 84 when the fellow soldiers beat him at the request of his superiors, in 88 when he was taken to communist headquarters and beaten so severely he lost his tooth, the attempted kidnapping of his daughter in 93 in retaliation for his outspoken views. I mean, there the acetone attack on his family's life when he was a child, his wife's testimony about the assault in 93, those are pretty significant things, aren't they?
It's correct, Your Honor, that the immigration judge doesn't expressly address those. I'd be happy to address those right now, Your Honor.
I don't know
if it's
good address for you to address them, because we're supposed to review what the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals does.
I think the immigration judge's opinion may not be expressed on this point, but the immigration judge heard all the testimony, and he did make a finding that what happened to Mr. Blagojev in Bulgaria doesn't rise to the level of persecution on account of political opinion. In fact, the opinion doesn't address each piece of evidence, I think, is...
Well, as Judge Williams said, the pieces of evidence omitted were not trivialities.
Well, It's true that the opinion doesn't address the evidence that Judge Williams mentioned. I think each of those instances does not undermine the conclusion of the immigration judge and does not, under the substantial evidence standard of review, justify reversal by this court. Some of those incidents, it is not at all clear from this record, occurred on account of political opinion.
That's for the immigration judge to decide, not for you to decide. If he said they didn't occur, okay, well, we would give that due weight, but he didn't say that. So as far as we know, he just thinks all those things, even if they're true, don't amount to anything.
Well, I may have misspoken, Your Honor. I didn't mean to suggest that anyone thought those incidents did not occur. The immigration judge appears to have credited the testimony. What I meant to say is that the evidence does not make clear that some of those incidents occurred on account of petitioner's political opinion.
Well, I say if the immigration judge wants to say that, he can say that.
I think the immigration judge did. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He didn't say it.
Well, he did say that he didn't address those instances specifically. That's true, but he did say, having heard all the evidence, that the petitioner's experiences in Bulgaria before 1993.
Yes, but an opinion like this doesn't give a reviewing court any confidence that you're dealing with someone who's conscientious and competent. That's your problem. Okay, well, thank you very much. And Mr. Burton, does he have any?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank